Today's show is brought to you by Underbrush, a new thriller by Kevin Carr. There's something in the woods, something worth killing for. Only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. Today's show, we're going to be traveling back to the past and talking about Cinderella, not the original animated film, but the live-action remake that's coming out this week. We're also going to be talking about Run All Night, Red Army, and Wild Canaries, some smaller movies that are out in the theaters and on demand right now. I'll also be talking about some of the news. We'll visit the trailer park and get some box office predictions, and of course, the world-famous DVD roundup. But first of all, this is how you can get in touch with me. You can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or Facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, you can go to twitter.com/kevincarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
That's right, Ron Burgundy. Let's roll right into the news. There's one big piece of news that I am actually going to save for later. I want to take a little more time to just specifically talk about Ghostbusters and the new movies that are being developed in a later segment. I want to move more into just some announcement news. There's been some pretty big announcement news over the last couple days, but even the last week or so, that are worth talking about. The biggest ones come out of Disney. And probably one of the biggest ones is the fact that at Disney's annual shareholder meeting this past week, they announced they were developing Frozen 2. Now, that is, of course, kind of in the no-duh expectations. Even though the directors have come out and earlier and said part two is may not even happen, you can't trust what the directors say or the stars say, because they're shackled by what the studios want. And Disney wants to release Frozen 2 at their shareholder meeting to sort of get, because that was a huge moneymaker, Frozen was. So why not release the information that there's going to be a sequel there? Not a big surprise on this one. I mean, it's like the highest grossing animated film ever, and it's a massively popular movie. And it is also something that girls like and women like, and that seems to be something that Disney really wants to cultivate, and good for them, because they're charging forward into a marketplace for that, and that's a smart business move. Another smart business move is there are some Star Wars announcements coming out of Disney. It was funny, the first one I actually saw was the announcement for the director and release date of Star Wars Episode 8. Now, we all know we got Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens, opening this Christmas.
There has been an awakening. Have you felt it? The dark side. And the light.
Well, Star Wars Episode 8 will open a year and a half later on May 26, 2017. So they're going back into a summer release schedule for this one. And what's interesting about that date is it is 40 years and one day from the release of the original Star Wars movie back in 1977. That's just a little footnote that I think they chose that date for that reason. It's a good release date. It's right before Memorial Day. It's a huge release date to drop something that day. It's also going to be written and directed by Rian Johnson, who most recently did Looper, which was a pretty fantastic movie. Although Rian Johnson has always done smaller, more independent movies like Brick and The Brothers Bloom, he's not a tentpole director, but he's getting a chance to do that. And I think that's cool. These studios are taking some of these smaller directors who've shown a lot of promise. And we saw that with Drew Goddard, who was actually, this is another piece of news, Drew Goddard, who directed Cabin in the Woods, and was also a writer for Joss Whedon. He's going to be doing the new Spider-Man movie. So they're pulling some of these really good directors out of the indie field and giving them a chance to do something huge. And so Rian Johnson will be doing Star Wars Episode 8. We don't even know what Episode 7's about. So let's not get ahead of ourselves there. They're also going to be releasing 20 new books to provide backstory and canon for the expanded universe. Because if you don't know anything about Star Wars had in the 90s, they started to release a lot of extended universe stuff. Timothy Zahn wrote three books, and they had other people writing paperback novels, and they had gaming information, and they had comic books that has become very rich and filled with a lot of story. There's a lot more information and story in those than are in those six movies that George Lucas did. And now that Disney has control, they kind of want to rein that in, and they say, well, that's all not going to count now. We're going to make our own expanded universe, which makes sense because it's very complex. And they already have what happens with Han and Leia and Luke and their children. So they're sort of hitting the reset button on that. But then the 20 new books doesn't mean there's going to be 20 new novels in the next year or so. It means that there's going to be picture books and sticker books and a lot of stuff for kids, but it's supposed to be establishing this new universe. Also in Star Wars news, they're going to be doing the spinoff film. Star Wars Rogue One is coming out December 2016. It is going to be starring Felicity Jones, who, of course, was nominated for an Oscar for The Theory of Everything. I love Felicity Jones. I think seeing her in a big-budget movie, that kind of makes me more excited than anything else because I think she's great. And I think Disney's doing a great job picking people that have a lot of good credibility behind them, both as directors and stars for these films. A couple other news, also out of Disney, Tim Burton's going to be doing a live-action remake of Dumbo. Of course, we got Alice in Wonderland did very well for him, and he had Angelina Jolie and Maleficent. Now we've got the straight-up adaptation of Cinderella we're going to be talking about this week. But now he's going to be doing a live-action remake of Dumbo, which isn't really live-action, because he's not going to really make a real elephant fly. It's going to be CGI. I don't know. This seems like they're just trying to do, they're just going to do it with everything, which they did a live action remake of 101 Dalmatians, and that was a big hit. That was like 20 years ago. I don't know. I'm not excited about that one. I am excited though about Tron 3, which begins production this fall, and Joseph Kaczynski is going to be coming back to direct it. He did Tron Legacy and Oblivion. I liked Tron Legacy. I had a blast. I know a lot of people maligned it, and it wasn't a perfect movie and it had its problems, but boy, it was a ride. And I like Kaczynski. I liked Oblivion, even though Oblivion was iffy and that was more Tom Cruise problems, but I just, his vision is so incredible. So I'm looking forward to Tron 3. Other development news, we've got Zoolander 2 in production. Derek Zoolander and Hansel crashed the Paris Fashion Week. And then of course, I mentioned earlier, Drew Goddard is directing the new Spider-Man movie. So a lot of geek news is happening. For as much as they maligned it in the Academy Awards opening number, superhero movies and big budget movies are still happening. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies, and that sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to hit is Clown. It is not a comedy. It is from Eli Roth, which should tell you it's not a comedy. It opens in 2015, there's not an actual release date for it, and I think it's because these movies tend to be a little bit crazy and violent. But anyways, Clown, about a killer clown.
There's no clown coming.
Who double books a clown?
I thought you had a backup.
Everything's gonna be fine. I physically cannot get it off. It's suffocating.
You bet. That's not dead.
I can feel myself changing. It's not a costume. It's skin of a demon.
This one looks grisly and terrifying. I'm kind of a sucker for clown movies. I think clown movies are clowns are such great horror icons. And I think they're doing something amazing here with this suit that turns a person into a clown. Sort of like the worst, darkest universe of killer clowns from outer space, only this one's not from outer space. I'm definitely looking forward to this one, hoping to see it in the next couple months, and it might be a good Halloween selection as well. The next film I want to talk about is Mr. Holmes, starring Ian McKellen as an aging Sherlock Holmes, opens on July 17th.
His name is Mr. Sherlock Holmes.
Was that him?
Mr. Holmes, are you all right?
All right, Roger.
The photograph is her, isn't it? The woman in the story. Is it real?
The case was my last.
This one I'm not as interested to see as I am to see Clown, but it looks like it will be a more classical version of Sherlock Holmes. It's not going to be as hip and as pop as either Sherlock on the BBC or Elementary on CBS or the Sherlock Holmes movies from Guy Ritchie. It looks interesting, but it might also be a little bit of a bore. So I don't know. I'm holding out reservations on this one. But that's it. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Red Army and Run All Night. There's something in the woods, something worth killing for. In Kevin Carr's new thriller, Underbrush, four budding scientists work together to discover a secret hidden in the mysterious Kaikman Woods. This dangerous chain of events is kicked off when a student disappears in the woods near a small college. Four graduate students are brought into an abandoned area of the forest for a secretive biological study, which is nothing more than a cover to look into the truth behind the disappearance. Underbrush by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Kevin Carr with Fat Guys at the Movies, continuing ahead. We're going to be talking about something that has nothing to do with Disney or Star Wars or Frozen or Dumbo or Tron. We're going to be talking about a movie you may not have actually heard of. It's called Red Army. Even though it sounds like it's a sequel to Red Heat with James Belushi and Arnold Schwarzenegger, it's not. It's a documentary. And it covers a unique angle to a unique idea. Red Army is a documentary that looks back at the Cold War era Russian hockey team and how they developed their winning strategy behind the Iron Curtain.
I was born in Soviet Union. It was pretty rough. I play a game. I play hockey.
Hockey was the most popular sport in the Soviet Union. From childhood, they picked out the best of the best of the best. It was politics, really. The game for them wasn't just the game. It was also propaganda.
Cold War passions are running very, very hot.
Soviet military forces have invaded Afghanistan.
Sport were, in a way, a kind of warfare.
Now, anyone who knows me, and I'm sure you do, if you listen to the show, you've probably heard me say, I am not a fan of sports. I've never been a sports fan. I grew up in Columbus, Ohio, within like a stone's throw of OSU, Ohio State University. I just never been a fan. I don't really care about sports. I'm a movie guy. I spent my Saturdays and Sundays at movie theaters, not at home watching football. Even though I went to Bowling Green State University, and hockey's pretty big up there, and you go up into Canada and it's huge. And I live in Columbus, Ohio, where we got our own hockey team, the Blue Jackets. I don't care about hockey either. I'm just not a sports guy. But to me, the good sign of a good sports documentary, or a good sports movie for that matter, is if it's compelling and interesting to me, not being a sports fan. And I have to say, Red Army does that. It's not the greatest documentary that's been around, and it actually came out very limited last year for an award season run. It didn't win, obviously. It didn't get very many or any nominations, I don't think. But what I found fascinating about it is it uses hockey for what it really was to the Russians. In the Russians, hockey wasn't just a sport, especially during the Cold War, particularly in the 70s and 80s and 90s. Hockey was a symbol of Russian superiority and the way they trained their players, not just with the ferocity that they trained them, hours and hours of workouts and relentlessly training them, not letting them go home. Like, it was one story in this, they're talking about how one of the players' dad was dying, was on his deathbed, and the coach wouldn't let him go home to see him. That is how brutal their hockey training was. Not only how they trained, but how they put together their team. And we saw this in the movie Miracle. If you remember the film Miracle, I frame sports in terms of movies, and the movie Miracle about the 1980 U.S. hockey team beating the Russians was essential because the Russians trained their players to work as a unit, and they were sort of these five-men team on the ice, and so it really kind of broke apart a lot of the defenses of other teams, because instead of showboating or being an individual star, it didn't matter who got the goal as long as somebody got the goal. They had a very unique style, and it has so much connective tissue with the politics of the time and the Russians' feeling of superiority with the socialist agenda, and just the fact that it wasn't just beating the Canadians or the Americans at hockey wasn't just a game. It was a political statement, and the structure of the team was propaganda and how they handled them and also how these people lived. Because in America, you're a sports star, you have plenty of money, and you can do whatever you want to. You have a freedom to do whatever. These guys were sequestered, and their money and anything they made from it, since it was a socialistic system, all went to the government. So it's an interesting look at it from the Russians' point of view. And so being able to look back 20 years after the fall of the Soviet Union and to see how this played out in that respect and how it has implications for the future, it's kind of a fascinating film. It's a short movie. It's like 90 minutes. But it's worth checking out if you can catch it in your hometown or if you see it on demand or on a streaming option later on. It's worth checking out. So Red Army kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys of the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next film I want to talk about is Liam Neeson in Run All Night. He's, of course, done a whole bunch of these butt-kicking movies. I think this is like the third one in less than 6 months. Because he did A Walk Among the Tombstone, and I think that came out in like October. And then he did Taken 3, which was in January. And now he's done Run All Night, which tends to be a good time for him to release a movie. Liam Neeson plays a former hitman who kills a mob boss's son that was trying to kill his own estranged son.
I'm the only one ever cared about you. And all of that ended an hour ago when you killed my son.
Matthew, he was going to shoot Michael.
You know this has to end. I'm coming after your boy with everything I got.
Sean's going to come after you, Michael. And if he can't get to you, he's going to go after your family.
This has got to end tonight.
Tell everyone to get ready. Jimmy's coming.
I tend to like these movies with Liam Neeson kicking, but I didn't think Taken 3 was all that good, mainly because the Taken model was so changed for that series. But he's kind of made a career out of doing this. He's done a bunch of these movies, and they all are have a certain degree of interest and entertainment value to me. What's funny about this film is it has this weirdly similar plot and execution to John Wick. Where, remember John Wick that came out last, I think, October? That was a very over-the-top action movie with Keanu Reeves as a former hitman. And this one kind of has the same thing, where he's going after a mob boss's son. He doesn't have a son in John Wick, but it has that same sort of idea of they're going to throw everything after him because he's coming to get retribution. The Run All Night seems to try and make it a little more gritty, realistic. It makes it sort of that New York City cop drama as opposed to this over-the-top shoot 'em up that John Wick was. Run All Night stays somewhat grounded until it kind of gets to this second act action scene. It takes place in an apartment, and then it just goes completely off the rails, and then it tries to become bigger than it is, and it doesn't quite hold together. The idea is still there. I mean, it's a very paint-by-numbers type thing, but what makes it work is Liam Neeson, really. He makes it work. Ed Harris playing the mob boss, he also makes it work. He's a lot of fun to watch as a bad guy. We don't see as much of Ed Harris as we used to, and so it's nice to see him taking on a meaty role again. Joe Kinnaman, who plays his son, I'm not a big fan of his. He played RoboCop and he was in The Killing. I'm not a big fan of him. Genesis Rodriguez plays his wife. I would have liked to have seen a lot more of her, but she was just a throwaway wife in danger type character. But overall, Run All Night, it works. It doesn't overstay its welcome. It's less than 2 hours. It's a fine movie. It's the kind of movie that if you pay like $5 for a matinee, not if you live in New York. I have a friend who lives in New York, and she had posted a picture of a movie ticket she went to go see, and it was like $15 for an afternoon show. She's like, why is it so expensive? I'm like, because you live in New York. Come to Ohio. We have matinees for $5. And I'm sure elsewhere in flyover country it's like this. There are theaters that you can get very inexpensive prices to go into the theaters. If you go in like at noon on a Wednesday. And then there's a lot of deals where you can get like $2 popcorn and stuff like that. You can literally, if you do play your cards right, you can literally go see a movie and have concessions for less than $10, which is not a bad deal at all, ever. I mean, it's going to cost you $50 in New York to see the movie and get some popcorn. Probably $30. That was a slight exaggeration, but $10 is better than $30 when you're paying for something. Getting back to Run All Night, I thought it was an okay movie, worth checking out. Swerve into it on HBO sometime. Don't pay full price, but maybe in a matinee. And that's about it. Run All Night kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
All right, I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Cinderella and Wild Canaries.
Open Gangnam Style. Gangnam Style.
Kevin Carr rolling in with Fat Guys at the Movies. More movie reviews are going to be coming up. The big one this weekend is not going to be Run All Night. It's not going to be Red Army either. It's going to be Cinderella. This is the one that's causing the most buzz. And this is the one that's leading by a mile the pre-sale tickets through Fandango. And even though like Fandango online ticket sales aren't a strict one-to-one comparison where you can exactly predict what the box office is going to be, it's well ahead of other things. And it's a segment of the population, sure. But also when you consider Cinderella's aimed at a younger audience. And nowadays, you know, parents who are have young kids who are like 6, 7 years old, they're in their 30s. So these parents are not afraid of the internet. So they'll buy stuff online as well. But Cinderella is the big movie of the weekend. Kenneth Branagh directs this live action adaptation of the classic Disney animated film.
You'll merely be your stepmother, and you'll have two lovely sisters to keep you company.
Wouldn't you prefer to eat when all the work is done, Ella?
Yes, stepmother.
Oh, you needn't call me that. Madam will do.
Are you all right, miss? What do they call you?
Never mind what they call me.
I hope to see you again, miss.
And I you.
You shall not go to the ball.
Excuse me.
Why are you crying?
Who are you?
That's better.
My fairy godmother.
I'm a huge fan of Disney, and in particular Disney animation. There have been some stumbling blocks over the years in Disney animation. Specifically, the 80s were a rough time for Disney animation, where you had, even though The Fox and the Hound was cute and charming, you had stuff like The Great Mouse Detective in the mid-80s, where they were really trying to get their footing before The Little Mermaid took off and started like sort of like the second golden age of Disney animation. I wouldn't call myself a huge fan of the Disney princesses, because that's just kind of not my bag, but you cannot deny the grandeur and quality and charm of movies like Snow White, Cinderella, Sleeping Beauty. Cinderella is a classic, but it's also 65 years old. It came out in 1950. Disney remaking this movie is not crass, in my opinion, because the movie's 65 years old. And they're making a live-action adaptation of it. They made a live-action adaptation of 101 Dalmatians in the mid-90s. That was only, 30-some years after that movie came out. This one is, like I said, 65 years. And this is also not like Gus Van Sant remaking Psycho, where he takes a near-perfect classic and decides to just sort of reshoot it, but do it slightly differently to make it crappy. That's what the Psycho remake was. This is not that. It is done with care and quality and truthfulness to the original film. And Kenneth Branagh dips back into his sort of classical training, because he did, of course, Thor and Jack Ryan Shadow Recruit last year. But he cut his teeth doing Shakespearean films. And if you go back and you watch like Hamlet, his Hamlet is a beautiful movie. And if you go back and you watch Much Ado About Nothing, that's a beautiful movie. I mean, his Henry V, that's very gritty and bloody. But his more somber classics, you know, cleaner classics than Henry V, he has a lot of experience making something look lavish and palatial. And he does that with Cinderella. It's a beautiful looking film. It's got great production design, and it's got great costume design. It's got great effects. Yeah, it's pretty much the animated film. If you've seen the 1950 Cinderella classic, you've seen this movie. It's kind of almost beat by beat the same thing. And while you have a little bit of difference, I mean, Helena Bonham Carter, who does a great job as the fairy godmother, she plays very differently than the sort of the Betty White version from the 1950s. And Cate Blanchett sort of makes the evil stepmother her own, gives her a little bit more humanity. Whereas in the original animated film, she was just evil for evil's sake. This one, she has a little bit of a reason for having such a dour outlook on life. And Prince Charming is given a little more, because I think in the original Cinderella, I don't even know if he has very many lines. He's more developed than Prince Charming in Snow White, who just shows up singing at the end and saves Snow White. But he's not as developed as Prince Philip in Sleeping Beauty. I think in the original Cinderella, he's standing there at the ball and he yawns because he's tired of being presented with all the potential brides. And then he's enamored with Cinderella and then he wants to catch her. There's no depth to his character. They give him something in this movie, which is cool because you kind of need that. And what's odd about this is the Disney Prince Charmings are generally about as developed as a love interest for a male-centric movie. It's just switched. I mean, all the character development goes on the woman, on the female characters for these movies, and the male is sort of the love interest is sort of sidelined, and he's still sidelined to this movie. There's not a whole lot of depth to him here, but it's really Cinderella's movie. Lily James is charming and wonderful and sweet as Cinderella, way better than Elle Fanning as Aurora in the Maleficent film, who is sort of this ditzy blonde, just kind of bouncing around through life like a ball in a pinball arcade machine. This is a sweet movie. It's not for, you know, your typical boy crowd. If you got daughters or girls or somebody who's really into Disney Princess, whether they be boys or girls, they're going to love this movie. That's who it's made for. It's a charming film. It's worth checking out. So, Cinderella kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next film I want to talk about is Wild Canaries. It's a smaller release. I believe it's available on demand, but it's also in limited theaters. I don't know whether it's actually classified as a mumblecore movie, because I think it's more scripted than that, but it has its roots in mumblecore. It's about a couple living in Brooklyn who begin to suspect that their neighbor murdered his own mother next door.
You're saying that Anthony killed Sylvia?
No, I'm
his
not
mother?
Saying that. He has a motive. She probably has a life insurance policy.
I broke into his house and I think I found something.
You really liked my mother, didn't you?
Yeah.
You're a lot like her. She was a little nosy, too.
You promised me that you weren't going to break into any more apartments.
Noah could wind up the prime suspect.
What if he killed somebody dressed as me?
It's not a big deal. I'm your alibi. It's fine.
Can your fiancé be your alibi?
Part of what this film does, even though that sounds like a very sinister plot, it's sort of takes a Woody Allen approach. Because even Woody Allen with his murder mysteries are always sort of these lighthearted romps. He always has these sort of neurotic characters in them. And that really is what this reminds me of. It reminds me of these sort of 70s era Woody Allen, sort of silly, where you've got some pretty hefty things happening. I mean, you got murder potentially happening in this movie. And really, it's this couple of fighting their own neuroses and interpersonal issues and history. And they're together, but they're kind of estranged. And it's not even that they're estranged. They're just put two people together and they're going to fight occasionally. But it's trying to be adorable. It does capture the charm of that kind of romp. The stars are pretty good. The director is Lawrence Michael Levine, and he also stars in it, which may be a mistake. I get the whole independent need to be in your own movie, but I think it would have done better with a different actor in that role. His wife, Sophia Takal, who's been in a bunch of his films, she plays his girlfriend, and she's a little cuter, quirkier, very Woody Allen, Annie Hall-ish kind of flighty, kind of that predating the Manic Pixie Dream Girl. It also has Jason Ritter playing a role and Kevin Corrigan. They're pretty decent. They're more recognizable than these two. Now, Levine and Takal have these roots in mumblecore. And like I said, it's not a I'm not a huge mumblecore fan. The problem with mumblecore movies is there is this sense of having to keep the scene going and not have any silence. So people over improvise. And that's why I don't like mumblecore, because it rings so false to me. Even though a lot of people think, oh, it's so real because it's improvised dialogue. It's not. You know, in real conversations, you have pauses and people say stupid things and people don't have their thoughts together and they stop talking. Whereas in mumblecore, they don't. But I don't think I don't know if I'd call this, if this would actually classify as a mumblecore movie, simply because it is not that free-formed. It actually has a little more control reined in. So overall, it's kind of a sweet little charming movie until you get to the end, where it has probably one of the most lame resolutions I've seen in a while. It has a great resolution story-wise. It's just the way it presents itself is such a letdown at the end of the movie that it just could have been so much better. And they just sort of swept it under the rug because it would have taken too much work to do it differently. But overall, I mean, Wild Canaries, if you like that sort of thing, you might enjoy it. I'm going to have to say, though, because of that ending, And the way they presented it, it kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Oh, okay.
All right, that's it. I need to go to a break. When I come back, we're going to be talking about more news, Ghostbusters, and the box office, and of course, the world-famous DVD Roundup. Elizabeth Stokes' new romance novel, Five Nights in Vegas, is about meeting, getting married, and falling in love, in that order. Lexi Frost is a cocktail waitress in a Las Vegas casino. Nate Zimmerman is a marketing executive from back east. After a chance meeting on Nate's business trip, they wake up to discover they got married at an all-night wedding chapel. During their whirlwind attempt to undo their mistake, Lexi and Nate discover they might just be made for each other after all. Five Nights in Vegas by Elizabeth Stokes is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store, and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Fat Guys in the Movies with Kevin Carr. Final segment rolling into a little bit more news I want to talk about. This is a piece that sort of set the internet on fire earlier this week. It's such a bizarre story coming out of Sony. As we all know, Paul Feig, who of course directed Bridesmaids and The Heat, he is developing a female Ghostbusters movie. And it was always reported as the remake of Ghostbusters or a reboot of Ghostbusters, but with women. And that was the big catch. And of course, you're going to have like Melissa McCarthy in it. Well, they just came out with an announcement this week where Sony said they're going to be making a male-centric. I don't know if they use the term male-centric, but they're going to be doing another Ghostbusters movie. And it's going to have like Channing Tatum in it. That's what kind of caused people to wig out. And here's why. I was never sold on the idea of the female Ghostbusters movie. Not that I have any issue with women in a movie. I just don't like the idea of stunt casting. I don't like the idea of saying, well, this would be a crappy movie, but we're going to put women in it and try and make it work. And you're just going to go see it. It's sort of like when they did a Black Annie. I'm like, just do an Annie movie. And if you happen to cast Quvenzhané Shanae Wallace in it, that's fine. But this isn't The Wiz. You know what I mean? This isn't where you're going to say, we're going to do an urban version of The Wizard of Oz. So doing a female Ghostbuster, I don't know. It's fraught with some issues. But what makes it at least somewhat interesting is that they're like, well, you know, we're going to, there's been so much talk over the last year or so about women not getting their due in Hollywood, women not getting strong roles, women not being focused on, women having marginalized characters and not having a lot to do, not just in the movies, but directing the movies. And so that's sort of one little silver lining to the fact that, hey, maybe we might be doing something. It's going to be moving ahead a little bit as a culture. Then coming out and saying we're going to do a male Ghostbusters, it seems sort of crass because it's kind of like saying, well, I know we're going to do this girls Ghostbusters, but we're sure that they still need help. It seems so condescending to then steal their thunder with the, well, here's the real Ghostbusters we're going to do. This was just the girls. That's, I think, what rings so sour with many people, is even if you're not a fan of the idea of doing a female Ghostbusters, by suddenly then saying we're also going to do a male Ghostbusters, is just anticlimactic and condescending and kind of rude. I don't know if that's the right word for it. But here's what Sony's doing. It also shows that they learned nothing from the whole Spider-Man debacle. Now, if you don't know what happened with Spider-Man, Sony has the rights to Spider-Man, and they've had the rights to Spider-Man for decades. And of course, when they started doing superhero movies, it was Sony who really made them work. I mean, yeah, X-Men did very well. But then when Sony made Spider-Man in 2002, it became a huge hit. And Spider-Man 2 was a huge hit. And Spider-Man 3, and despite it getting some bad reviews, it was also a huge hit. It was a massive three-movie juggernaut. And it wasn't until 2008 that Marvel, as an entity, started making its own movies. And yeah, they did Iron Man in 2008. And everyone was like, oh, that's cute. You had a hit. And then they did The Incredible Hulk, which didn't do terribly well. And then they had Thor and Captain America, which did okay, but weren't massive hits. But then when The Avengers came out in 2012, it was a game changer. It made $200 million the opening weekend, $600 million domestic. It was a massive, massive, massive hit. And everyone's like, oh my God, we need to do our own Avengers, which is why you've got DC trying to back end everything into this awkward Batman versus Superman movie that was originally supposed to be a Man of Steel part two, but now is somehow also serving as a reboot of Batman and an origin story in a way for Aquaman and Wonder Woman. They're not taking the 4 years to do just four separate movies and then do a team, which is what Marvel did. No one wants to wait that long. Everyone wants to do it now. Everyone wants their Avengers movie now. You don't get that. The Avengers, if you would have released the Avengers in 2008 or 2009, right after Iron Man and the Incredible Hulk, wouldn't have been as big. Avengers worked because it had five movies preceding it. It was the sixth movie in a series. When Sony realized that all they had was Spider-Man, they're like, well, let's make our own cinematic universe with Spider-Man. And they started developing with the Amazing Spider-Man movies. They started to introduce the Sinister Six, and they were going to have their own series. And that just never quite worked because they don't have the wide range of characters. Part of the things that makes the Avengers work is there's four different characters you can pull from the movies. And then even within that, you've got Black Widow and Hawkeye that you can do some stuff with. They got a whole TV show based on it. The reason Spider-Man could never work as its own extended universe, because it's just Spider-Man. It's Spider-Man and then Spider-Man, other Spider-Man characters. So that's why it never really took off, because it doesn't have the richness of already road-tested characters that they know people like from the comic books. People know that they like Thor and Captain America and Incredible Hulk, so they say we're pretty good at getting a movie out of those. They're not doing something out of Mandrake the Magician or something like that. That's sort of a forgotten character. They want to do Ghostbusters, and Sony still wants their big, huge franchise. And they're building a franchise not on comic books that have been around for decades that have refined stories and characters that they know how people react to. They're basing it on a series that had one movie that was decent, a sequel made 5 years later that was pretty crappy, and what, a cartoon on Saturday mornings? And they want to make their entire franchise out of that. They didn't learn anything from the Spider-Man thing. They're trying to do with Spider-Man with Ghostbusters because they don't have anything to mine. And that's why this Ghostbusters news is a harbinger of some not so great stuff. They're trying to build a franchise out of something that had one good movie, as opposed to Marvel building a franchise out of an entire comic book line that had been around for decades. That, yeah, maybe not everybody knew because not everyone read the comics, but at least they had a storyline. You know, Star Wars can do that because there's a lot to mine in Star Wars and you can go everywhere. Star Wars has an entire universe. Ghostbusters was a one-shot movie in the 80s. That's very, very good, but still hasn't been shown to work as a franchise or series. They could work. They could be funny, but they could also be a disaster. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about box office. Last week, I said Chappie would win. I was correct on that. I said it would make $20 million. I was incorrect on that. It made just over $13 million, which is really low. But it makes sense because Chappie was an R-rated movie. It was a conflicting movie. It felt like it should have been a PG movie. It should have been a movie more for kids and families because it's about this cute little robot. Yet it's this grisly action movie with gangsters and murder. Some pretty intense stuff happening in it. So it didn't do terribly well. Again, not a big surprise. Even though I kind of liked it, it had its problems. So we'll see what happens when he ends up, you know, exiting South Africa and doing an Alien sequel. The second best exotic Marigold Hotel did okay with $8.5 million, which isn't bad for that kind of movie. And then Unfinished Business was terrible. It didn't even make $5 million. It barely made it in the top 10. One thing is that did happen this past weekend is American Sniper finally got to the top spot in 2014 films. It made it over not just Guardians of the Galaxy over the weekend. It also made its way over Hunger Games: Mockingjay Part 1. What's interesting about 2014 is if you look at the top movies, in the top five movies, only one of them was released in that standard traditional big budget time frame. Hunger Games was released leading up to Thanksgiving, which is a very typical time for big, huge numbers in movies. You know, Thanksgiving, Christmas, and then the summer. All the other stuff in there, Guardians of the Galaxy came out in August. August releases generally don't do $300 million. Captain America was released in April, so not a big... So you had the Lego movie was released in February. The top five movies, four of them were from odd times. I mean, yeah, technically American Sniper was released on Christmas, but it was in very, very limited. It didn't have a full release until January, and it made, what, $100-some million that first weekend, which is unheard of. This weekend, I think it's a pretty safe bet Cinderella's going to win. I'm going to say $60 million. That's kind of the number I'm hearing bounced around. never can discount Disney. Disney knows how to market a movie. They know how to target an audience, and they're doing it perfectly with this movie. All right, that sound means it is time to roll into the world-famous DVD Roundup. Speaking of The Hunger Games, Mockingjay Part 1, that has been out on DVD kind of for a half of a week. It came out at the end of last week. It was one of those weird Thursday-Friday releases. I wasn't a huge fan simply because it didn't have the ending. The ending was, and I actually watched it again. I was on a cruise this past Valentine's Day, and they showed it on the deck of the ship, and my wife wanted to see it again, so we went up and watched it. I was just reminded that I didn't think it was that great of a movie. Also out this weekend is Night at the Museum, Secret of the Tomb, one of Robin Williams' final films. I like the Night at the Museum movies. It's not as huge as the other ones were, but this was fun. There's also Listen Up, Philip, which is a comedy about Jason Schwartzman as an acerbic writer trying to outlive his fame. It's interesting in a Woody Allen sort of way. Ancient Aliens Season 7, Volume 1, if you want to know more about aliens and how they supposedly influenced ancient civilizations. The Breakfast Club is having its 30th anniversary Blu-ray release. It's one of the greatest John Hughes movies ever made. It defined a generation. And then finally, Wolf Cop is also out, which may actually be the stinker this week. I haven't seen it, but it's Wolf Cop. And the trailer looks terrible. So, yeah, Wolf Cop. I've seen worse trailers, but Wolf Cop's probably not that good. That's it. I'm done for the week. Next week, I'm going to be talking about Insurgent, The Gunmen, and Do You Believe? Until then, have a fat time at the movies.